Yesterday, in the beginning of the discussion and at the end, Vincent was bringing up his topic about the third stage of insight, samasana, jnana, and there was various questions, and I think he has been reading further and has some more questions. And one point that I'm interested in is because it talks about the kalapa samasana. And when we discussed this topic 20 years ago, because I went back to read my notes and details, we were talking about kalapa, like in the kalapa of rupas, and talking about understanding the group of rupas and the space in between. But when we were looking at it yesterday, we realized that actually here the kalapa is referring to the khandhas, not the kalapa of rupas, as we were discussing. Usually when we talk about kalapa, we are used to the understanding of rupas arising in a kalapa of eight or more rupas together. But I think in this context, when it talks about the kalapa, samasana, kartaya, and then naya, vipassanaya, that's another point about what is meant by naya. They translate it as inductive, but naya has other meanings. But here in this context of kalapa, samasana, vipassanaya, I think that the kalapa, from what I read further and understand, is referring to the khandhas, like when we discuss about the khandhas arising together, the nama khandhas arising and falling away together, and how each khanda arises and falls away immediately. And at this stage, there is the beginning to understand about the arising and falling away of khandhas, but it's not as firm or developed as in the next stage. So it can be confusing if one doesn't understand that the kalapa is referring to the khandhas, not to the kalapa of rupas arising together. What do you think, Ajahn?
Well, conditioned reality is not khanda.
Every conditioned reality is khanda, yes. Any rupa,
even
any
just
vedana,
one.
Even one, yes.
One unit of hardness.
Yes.
Khanda.
Yes.
Whatever arises, one is khanda.
Yes, yes.
So now, no change at all. So please read from the very beginning and study carefully.
Right. I will read the English part and just add any Pali words. The knowledge established by getting to know the path and the not path, thus this is the path, this is not the path, is called purification by knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path. One who desires to accomplish this should first of all apply himself to the naya vipassana called comprehension of groups, kalapa, samasana, sankhataya. This is what is said. Vincent, carry on because he has more detail on this.
Word by word.
People cannot understand my English. What did you say? Were you?
I think we don't have to read anything, it's just one line.
One word. Like kalapa. And
word like kalapa, yes.
And khanda.
And khanda.
I think kalapa, Sarah just mentioned about, and Ajahn also explained, is that
how many rupas in a kalapa? See, each rupa is khanda.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
And here it's applied to
it's rupa, yes. In a group, it's,
yes,
a khanda.
Absolutely.
So here it's referring to any rupa, any conditioned dhamma
any
at all. So rupas is just like an example, but any conditioned reality at all,
yes,
is
anytime, anywhere, any
kalapa is referring to any
hardness, but we is kalapa is khanda. See, no matter it's in what kalapa, or just talking about the arising of that and falls away, whatever arises falls away is khanda.
But usually,
no matter in group or just one.
But usually when we talk about kalapa, we are referring to different rupas, but here I think the context is broader to like any vedana, any seeing, any hearing, any khanda at all is any hardness, but also any future.
No matter what.
Yeah, any khanda.
Whatever arises and falls away. Because whatever arises has to fall away.
Yes.
That's why whatever arises and falls away is khanda. It does matter, no matter how many in a group, 8 or 10 or 9, each one is a khanda. So it's a group of khanda, because Patvi is khanda, Apo is khanda. Because you see that just one reality, can it be realized?
There's comprehension by groups.
Because
so the question is, what is the group that's referring
because
to?
They arise together.
All khandas of the same kind, or is it different khandas together?
Just talk about
kinds of rupa khanda together.
Talk about just one reality, only one, only one. Hardness arises and falls away. One, right?
Right.
So that one is khanda. And in a kalapa, how many rupas, how many khandas? Because each rupa arises and falls away.
Has more than one meaning.
Because we don't talk about just one, we talk about a group. Kalapa is a group.
Kalapa means a group, but in the context of comprehension of groups, the question is whether it's talking about the kind of galapa you're referring to, or whether it means the group of all particular rupakandas, such as visible object, all visible object, past, present, or future.
If
that
there's
group of,
if there's no rupa at all, can there be group?
No.
So each one together in this one, how many rupa? The other group, how many rupas? See, different number of rupas in different group.
Mm-hmm. What about each Vedana? Because usually we don't talk about the Vedanas. They don't arise together in a kalapa like the rupas do, different Vedanas together. But in this context where kalapa is referring to the khandas, then even any
rupa khanda only.
Only rupa khanda?
For the word kalapa.
For the kalapa,
but for
okay.
The other, the nama, for nama khandas,
yeah. So when
together.
So when it talks about the samasamanyana, which is insight called comprehension by groups, because when we looked at what it says in other parts, it seems to be the kalapas referring to any khanda. Could you read your part out, Vincent, what it says about the meaning of kalapa there?
Oh. Just for a moment, please. When it's a moment of nama, for nama khandas together.
Yes.
Not just only one.
Yes.
And what are the sanya, vedana, sankara khanda, and vinyana khanda? Yeah.
But usually we wouldn't call these
kalapa,
no. But in this context.
I'm just in the comprehension of groups. It says that the abbreviation, the I, etc., should be understood to represent the following sets of things. And then it goes on to say the 5 aggregates, the 6 doors, 6 objects, 6 kinds of consciousness, 6 kinds of contact, feeling, perception, volition. So all these.
Do you
are
mean that
kalapas.
They are group?
Yes. Yes. The understanding of of all of one particular
can
kind
we understand
of reality
different meaning of what we say group?
Yes.
Because the group of rupa and the group of nama.
Yes.
The word kalapa is used to refer to all different khandas, I think.
So we can understand it by way of group.
Yes.
So when vedana is the object of understanding, what are there together which is not the object? Just like when hardness is the object, what are there in that group?
The other, mm-hmm. The jita and the jhetasikas, yeah. Together. So in this context, kalapa even includes this.
Just
meaning.
Understand the meaning of, yeah. It.
Do you want to read out your passage?
I can read this footnote. This footnote probably not the original text. It's the translator's opinion, maybe. The footnote says,
comprehension by placing together in groups the state, the total different state are differentiated into past, future, and present is comprehension by groups.
Excuse me, I asked Khun Kampan to look for the word kalapa.
So that is clear. That's the
word means group.
Yes.
But so usually it's the group of rupa.
And when we discussed this topic before, we just discussed it with regard to the usual meaning of kalapa of rupas. But here in this context, it can refer to any khandas, any group. Group.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Please read the footnote. You say.
The footnote, okay.
What I read before was comprehension by placing together in groups, total, the state that are differentiated into past, future, and present is comprehension by groups. It's in a footnote, right?
That's a quote from the
Patisamprita or
from the commentary to the Visuddhimagga.
The Tika.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it's Tika, yes. It's so an elaboration of the means.
Before this 14, previously, he defines all materiality as impermanent. He comprehends that it is impermanent. How? In the way stated next, the word next, it is said materiality, whether past, future, or present, is impermanent in the sense of destruction. So then it's followed. Accordingly, he comprehends the materiality that is past as impermanent in the sense of destruction because it was destroyed in the past and did not reach this becoming. I think that's what Ajahn was saying yesterday, right?
So now understand from the very beginning, whatever arises is conditioned to arise and then fall away, only one at a time, right? Sound, just sound. Right. But they cannot arise by itself, only one.
Right.
There are other conditioned realities arising together.
Right.
No matter it's the rupa or the nama, the group of rupa, the group of nama. Just understand in that sense, they cannot arise just alone.
Yes.
They arise together.
I told you, just give a perfect example of what followed next. You were talking about sound. That's external sound. Does not pass sound
not
to the internal
any
sound.
Any external or internal, any, just any.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the summary. That's the conclusion from the.
No matter it's outside or inside.
Yes.
Whatever
yes.
is there. Just talk about one reality.
Yes.
To understand what it's meant by a group.
Right.
Because one reality cannot be two together, just one.
Right.
Hardness is hardness. Heat is heat, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So now understand each reality as it is, arising and falling away. Khanda. Whatever arises falls away is a khanda. So arupa is a khanda. Sound mm-hmm. is a khanda. Hardness is a khanda. Okay, no doubt about khanda, right? And they arise together. We can say in group. Or just they arise together. Mm-hmm. It's understood that they cannot arise alone. Mm-hmm. And now just one group which arise together cannot be directly experienced at all. Is that right? So that becomes the word nimitta, the succession of the same reality arising and falling away appears as seeing sees now, but many moments. And even at moment of seeing, there is not the vijnana khanda. There is also seven cetasikas arising together in group. We can say that. A group. A group. And there are many groups, right?
And this is what
so this is the meaning of
kalapa in this mm-hmm. context. The jita and cetasikas arising together. The rupas arising together. Any rising together, and that's how it is here or there or past or future, always arising together.
Okay,
And excuse me. Yeah. And when there's no understanding of the truth of this, we take the nimitta, the arising and falling away of the world, of reality, appear as not just only one, but the nimitta of one characteristic appears, like now seeing only, appears as seeing. So how many moments of seeing? Nimitta. And not just seeing, because there are cittas before seeing and citta after seeing. But what appears in the world must be only six dhavas, while there are so many other reality arising together, but they do not appear at all. So now, no doubt about one reality, one khanda, and in a moment when it's only one group, how many reality are there? Like seeing now, there must be feeling another khanda together, but they do not appear. So we understand another meaning of group. Many realities arising together.
Yes.
And since now, uncountable groups of nama and rupa, because we understand each one that it seeing cannot be feeling, cannot be sanya. So understand what it's meant by group at that moment arise together, right? And now the many groups of group, just one group, and there are many, many groups of seeing, right? And what can be known is only one reality at a time as nama, rupa, pariccheyana. No understanding of many groups as they are. Realities cannot be changed at all, exactly like now, but only panya is sharper and sharper and clearer and clearer as now. So at this moment, when it is only the first vipassanayana, even there's many groups, many realities, but when it appears, no doubt about the characteristic that experiencing the object. And that which appears as not experiencing, no experiencing anything at all, the rupa. That's why no doubt about the distinction between the nama and the rupa. In group, even there are many groups, uncountable, but the group do not appear as how many groups, but they cannot be only one group. Many other groups too appears as the characteristic of nama and the characteristic of rupa.
Yes.
And okay.
Ajahn, at this stage, yes, nama rupa paricheda has attained. At this third stage, the emphasis here is the comprehension of impermanent in the sense of destruction.
Not yet at the first stage at all.
Not the first stage, the third
stage. That's why we are now talking about the first stage. In order to continue to the higher states, if we don't understand the first states clearly, the higher states cannot be known at all. So now, at moment of nama rupa paricchesayana, what appears, see, no one can imagine how great wisdom Buddha had attained, and the other who followed the path can experience such states. What appears now cannot appear together. Many groups appears at people and things. How many groups, what is meant by group? So, just like now, when it's time, condition to appear as it is, as no one. Because vipassanayana experiences the nama and the rupa, nobody at all. Imagine no world, no one, only the very clear characteristic of that which experiences. At that moment, how can there be the world, the sun, the people, the sky, the room, anything at all? That's why no doubt about the reality which has no shape and form, smell, taste and tongue, or anything, only nothing, only the experiencing is them. No doubt about the characteristic which arises and experience right now, unknown, because it's hidden by the nimitta of many things around. And the reality which is nama does not appear as table and thing, only that which appears as it is, one characteristic at a time. Even in group, it's there, many groups, but some group appear, not all together right now at all. So very close, arising and falling away. And that is the moment of no doubt about the characteristic of nama, the experiencing, and the rupa. And this is the first vipassanayana. Otherwise, how can there be the understanding, the difference between pariyati and patipati and pativeda? So without the pariyati, it's impossible for even direct awareness begin to understand what is there now. So natural as it is, by conditions, not by I'm trying to concentrate on this and that, or try to have conditions, thinking a lot about it, considering a lot about it. That's not the path. Because the path is so very subtle, so natural, because no one there. If there is the idea of I, it's not the path, even that. So how subtle it is, just so natural. Moment of seeing is moment of seeing and beginning to understand that it's there, it's seeing, but it's not clear. Just developing the understanding of seeing right now as it's seeing, it's real, that's all. Until it gets closer and closer to the nature of seeing, to understand the characteristics of seeing. Even there is seeing each moment from birth to death. It's not known as it is. No understanding of it without the intellectual understanding to condition moment of direct awareness with direct understanding. Begin to understand it. What is there is the object of understanding. No selection. And how long it will take to let go desire, doubt, attachment, wanting, craving, hidden, that it's there all the time. That's why right understanding before it can let go the idea of self, how great it is. Not just thinking, considering about the group, about this and that, but it's the moment of directly experience a characteristic. And it is nimitta of that characteristic. So this is the first stage. How many stages are here? So how clear it has to be before there can be the letting go permanently, absolutely, of wrong understanding and the idea of self. This is the first stage before that. And we go on to that.
I'd just like to say that, interesting though this is, what you're wanting to get to the bottom of is the meaning of groups in this context. And you have a particular idea of what that means. You like to present the passages that support that. But can we analyze a text in a group setting like this? I'm not sure that, I mean, we can discuss the Dhamma generally. But...
Well, what does the group mean? That's just one of the part of the question. But the question was, what's the significance of this stage of insight? Because
it's... And we discussed that yesterday, didn't we?
Right.
We came to a conclusion. Well, I put forward a suggestion which I thought you found acceptable, but perhaps not on reflection.
Okay, let me finish some reading and then let's see. Okay, now about internal and external.
So you're reading from paragraph 14, right?
Right, right.
So this is all chapter. This is all a commentary on the passage at the beginning of paragraph 13, isn't it?
Yeah, I read a conclusion of paragraph 13.
No, the beginning.
I should start from the beginning.
Yeah, because that's the important bit. Here is the application, and then this is the bit to read, and then What follows after that, those bits in italics, are all a commentary on this sentence you're about to read.
Okay.
Right.
Paragraph 13. Here is the application of the directions dealing with the aggregate. Any materiality, whatever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, he defines all materiality as impermanent.
All materiality.
Yeah, all materiality as impermanent. But this is a generalization from his particular experience, because he said all materiality is impermanent. This is one kind of comprehension. And then the same thing is said about dukkha. So this is one kind of comprehension. He defined it as painful. That's dukkha. And he defined it as not self. That's another kind of comprehension. So three comprehension here. That's the common characteristic of khandhas.
And each of those kinds of comprehension relates to all materiality, whatever.
Right. That's why it's called inductive insight. That's why this stage is inductive. Okay.
All materiality is a group, isn't it?
That's one way to look at group or reality. Yeah. But can I read something interesting here about internal and external?
The group is arising together.
The internal external here, interesting, is it's keep emphasized impermanence in the sense of destruction. The materiality is internal as impermanent in the sense of destruction, since it is destroyed. It is destroyed as internal and does not pass on to the external state. So when they talk about internal and external, the emphasis is on the destruction, does not pass on to the other state. So the sound does not pass on to
any group with sound arising together with other rupas in a group arises and falls away, no matter it's the group inside what we call the body or the group outside, no matter whether it's the group that was arose and fell away in the past or will arise and fall away in the future. Any group at all arises and falls away instantly, and that sound and the other rupas arising together with it, each one has the characteristic of anicca, dukkha, and anatta. Each
right.
one arises and falls away instantly. And the nimitta of just one reality can be the object of understanding at a time. So it's just by these interior, exterior paths, it's just showing that any group at all, any group of rupas or any chitta with accompanying chitta seekers.
Internal or external.
Yes, here right. or there or right. last life, next life. Always the nature of okay. chitta and chitta seekers arising
right.
together is to fall away instantly,
mm-hmm.
to be impermanent, unsatisfactory and not self. That's all.
I'll just read the last one that John was mentioned about another footnote. I'll just share the last one. The comprehension by groups, Kalapa Samasana, of chapter 20, which is simply generalization from one's own particular experience to each of the five aggregate as past, etc., as a group. So group here really mean from the footnote. It seems implied a group is past is a group, future is a group.
I think you could say they're subgroups of the whole, because the group is all materiality, as we read for a start. And then it goes on to discuss other things, but then it does talk about the different instances within that group.
All materiality is a group, but that knowledge is inductive from the particular experience, from the generalization of past, future, internal, external, and then have that knowledge, all material, whatever, any materiality is anicca, dukkha, and anatta. That's how I read it.
Well, I think as we discussed that the understanding regarding the past is inferred from the understanding of the present.
It's what Ajahn was explaining about the moment before it's gone already. So it does not become this becoming, it does not reach this becoming, that's past. That's directly experienced, right?
So what's the conclusion for the purposes of what you are trying to suggest?
Again, the initial question was starting from, I don't have the impression we talk about this stage, because we talk about the other stage a lot.
We don't talk about the other stages as such.
But anyway, the question turned to, what's the significance of this stage? Why it's so important as a stage? That's the question.
We're talking about group and Vipassana Dhyana, right? That's why there has to be the understanding that Vipassana Dhyana is not this moment. When we talk about outside or inside, it's this moment, seeing this moment, not Vipassana Dhyana. So in order to be Vipassana Dhyana, it has to be the understanding at level of directly experience what is now appearing normally, naturally. But right understanding of that is great enough to be able of that stage to incite the truth of the reality, one reality. But it's known as a kalapa, see, right? Because it cannot arise alone. But the other rupa, which is there, does not appear as the object. Only one object. For example, now, touching this, there is the idea of outside hardness and this inside hardness. But what is the nature of that, no matter it's outside or inside? When it's there, can it be outside? Not at all, right? And this is inside, because nothing to be inside or outside, because there is only a reality, only one reality at a time, and not just one object to be Vipassana Dhyana, because now there are many objects, but what can be the direct object of direct awareness and direct understanding is not all, not everything. Right now, there's touching, seeing, and hearing, many, many objects. It depends on which one is the object of experiencing at that time. So it is the same as Vipassana Dhyana, no selection. What characteristic of a reality is the object by then, by conditions. So at moment of experiencing hardness, not only one moment, not only one hardness, and then the other moment hardness, but not the same one. And that is the meaning of the past, the present, and the future. It is the same, but clearer and clearer and clearer, more precise, until the characteristic of it appear well, little by little, by different Vipassana Dhyana. So it's not the moment of directly understanding the arising and falling away, because it hasn't been discerned or realized at all about the truth at that moment. There is nothing else, only that object. When it is Vipassana Dhyana, it experienced with understanding perfect of the characteristic which is not self as that which experiences or that which does not experience. It can be sound, it can be anything. Does it last long, Vipassana Dhyana? So very short, because thinking of this moment, how many moments, and the moment of conditioned moment to realize the truth is there. Not like now, because it's so clear, but it's so natural. That's why by then on, from then on, it applies the experience to any moment in life after that. Because it understands the truth, but depends on conditions, the accumulation of ignorance, attachment, and other akusa so much that it hinders the progress of having more of remembering the experiencing so clear. That's why Vipassana is not parinya. Parinya is the application of the realization of the nama and rupa to whatever in life, naturally, by conditions. So that is the understanding of one's own accumulation, how much ignorance and attachment ever that moment is realized. But comparing to the high one, it's so very little, the beginning only, to directly experience the nature of nama and rupa. But what about thinking of nimitta and clinging to nimitta arises so soon after, on and on and on, covers up again and again. That's why there is the word in the development of Satipatthana, begin again, begin to understand it as it has been experienced. And let go the idea of I try or I concentrate on now I am so good because there is awareness and the object of right understanding. Everything becomes the object of understanding of one's own accumulation. To be realized, the truth that it's not me, no matter it is feeling or memory or any kind of, before understanding all my conditions, paccaya parikaha jnana. No matter what is there, no doubt about it, no attachment to it, because of understanding the paccaya at that very moment. And the three jnanas is the taruna vipassana jnana, not as strong as the uttiyavihara jnana, which is the beginning of the strong vipassana jnana.
We discussed how it's just the beginning of the understanding of the arising and falling away of realities, not the firm, developed, direct understanding of the arising and falling away. So that's why it's still just the tender insight. And you mentioned that we don't usually discuss it, but actually we do. We talk a lot about how a rupa cannot arise on its own. It has to arise together in a group. Citta cannot arise together without mental factors. They have to arise and they have to fall away together. And we talk a lot about how each reality in life is conditioned, arising by different conditions, and how the meaning of khanda is now, the seeing now arises and falls away. But when there is understanding of the visible object, no thought at all about interior or exterior. So when we read the text, we have to keep in mind that it's just referring to visible object, any visible object at all. But when there is the understanding of visible object,
no interior or exterior.
It's just a conventional way of putting it. Conventionally, we say here, in here, or out there. But actually, visible object is just
parinya, right? It's parinya. That's a nose.
But even when it is parinya, parinya just is the understanding of other objects that were not the object of vipassana. Is still not the knowing, having an idea of interior or exterior. For example, if visible object was the object of the direct vipassana understanding, parinya may apply that understanding to other objects like seeing or hearing or other realities, but still it's not thinking about interior and exterior. It's just the reality itself, no matter how conventionally we may put it. If I'm differentiating between the hardness in the body and the hardness out there in order to communicate, we can use this conventional language.
Understanding only becomes inductive when it's highly developed.
Right.
That's not sort of beginning level of inductive understanding.
No.
So there's limited application of this in this sense of what we are reading about here in chapter 20 to the present moment for us. But nonetheless, we do talk about how what is real in the past when the Buddha taught is real now, and what is real for us is real for all beings,
right,
not just another person, but all beings of any kind whatsoever.
Yeah, agree.
That aspect of chapter 20, we do talk about.
Yeah, it's through the discussion I realize we actually talk a lot. What we talk a lot is actually related to this stage.
when there's understanding of hardness, any hardness at all, no thought or concern about interior or exterior. So when reading about interior and exterior, we don't have to think about what kind of hardness it is, because hardness is just hardness.
Now that's thinking.
It's the understanding. Yeah. It's the understanding of the characteristic of hardness. When it's the understanding of hardness, no idea about which hardness, because it's just hardness. Actually, there's no inside and outside, because hardness is just hardness regardless.
Yes, that makes sense, but it's not direct knowledge.
So that's why, as Ajahn said, it has to start at the beginning. If there's not the understanding of what is clearly meant by nama and rupa and nama, rupa, paricheda, jnana, there cannot be the understanding of what is meant at this stage. So it has to begin now with what is hardness now, understanding its nature. It's always just that characteristic which is known, yes, no matter here or there or anywhere. It's just hardness.
Yeah, it has to come back to reality now. Yes, for sure. Any discussion has to be reality now.
Otherwise, it can never be understood what right. is meant.
Let's say about the attachment. Over the idol process, after the seeing, some moment they have the javana citta, attachment to the object, the visible object is the reality. And for the thinking about the concept of the things that we see forming from the many visible objects, so my question is, what is this different or the different characteristic of the attachment to the object, or what is the different level of the attachment over the idol or over the mind or process?
Well, there couldn't be a difference in characteristic, could there, between the attachment through one doorway and the attachment through another, because attachment just has the one characteristic, like all dhammas.
Right.
But there can be a difference in the accumulated tendency in relation to one doorway as opposed to another.
Yes.
For example, someone who is an artist, a visual artist, will have certain accumulations for noticing things through the eye door, whereas someone who's a musician will have accumulated tendency for noticing things through the ear door, just as an example.
Because our concern is about the object itself. The object over the idol is the realities. And the attachment in the idol process is the reality as well. But over the idol is just the concept of
right.
what just seen.
Right.
Right. So that is the question.
There could be different accumulated tendencies in relation to those two different objects.
And we also talked about different degrees of attachment, because I think this was his question. So before the discussion, we had a chat about how so quickly after the visible object is seen now, or so quickly after the hardness or softness is touched, there can be attachment instantly, but completely unknown. So we talk about the very subtle kinds of attachment that aren't known, that we call asava. So it's so subtle, not known at all. But when there is thinking more and more about what has been seen, about the impression of what is seen, the colors, the details, the image, the name, the person, then the attachment can be stronger and stronger, because the tendency is accumulated on and on. Quite different from the very subtle attachment that arises instantly after the visible object okay. is seen.
And what's the significance of this issue for you?
Not actually the issue, and just considers, because I just differentiate between the object of the attachment is the realities and the other is the concept.
Concept, yes. Yeah,
right.
So they are quite different.
I think Sarah just mentioned about asava. I think that's the poison.
I want to know how the Lokiya dhammas, how can they be related to realities the Lokiya Dhammas being the eight worldly conditions, praise and blame, gain and loss, fame and non-fame, praise, blame, pleasure, pain. They all seem like concepts. I'm wondering, how do they fit in with realities? That's my question.
They are concepts based on realities.
Yes, can you elaborate, please?
Well, praise and blame, for example. We all have an idea of what praise means, but it can come in different forms, can't it? For example, it can be verbal or nonverbal. There's no direct correlation between a particular conditioned reality and the concept. But nonetheless, the concept is based on realities, has to be, like all concepts.
Right, okay.
Particular conditioned realities.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess I was thinking, you know, like you've taken praise and blame. So if somebody praises you, that's sort of like, yes, it is a concept. Somebody's thinking that I'm good. So, but it you bring it back to what's heard and then thinking about what is heard. That's what you mean by then it becomes conceptual. Is that what you mean?
I mean that the idea of praise is conceptual too, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why I was having a bit of trouble. How do I relate it to realities?
Gain could mean financial gain, or it could mean material gain, or it could mean promotion at work or a non-material thing. So there's so many forms it can take.
Yeah.
It can't be related to any particular conditioned reality.
Right. Yeah.
We all know what it means. We know it.
If we're talking about the praise and blame, so only sounds are heard, but the thinking about those sounds takes some for being praise and others for being blame, but actually only sounds are heard. So that's why without understanding, we're so susceptible to these worldly conditions, the thinking on account of what has been seen and heard and touched and so on. But for those who have developed more and more understanding or vipassana jnana, less and less susceptibility to the worldly conditions, because no doubt that it's actually only sound that's heard. Why is there such a story about the praise that one enjoys so much, when actually it's just sound that's heard?
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking. And then, but it has been elaborated on. Okay. That's cleared it up somewhat for me. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Jonathan.
And just a quick point there, Zita. We talk about praise, of course, ninda pasamsa. Ninda, you know, you can be praised for doing something that's not very good either, you know, like it doesn't have to be good, you know, you kind of lose that word, you know, we like it, but and obviously that's attachment, but a lot of these worldly conditions can revolve around a lot of akusala, essentially. We often think of them being contradistinctive, but they're really often just evolve, you know, different types of akusala. But I appreciate the point Sarah just made then too, that there are ultimate realities involved, and the more they are understood, the less we will be under the sway of those Hataloka Dhamma. Yeah, no, thanks for that, Zita.
Okay, thank you.
This would be an instance of Dhamma referring to concept only.
Can you say that again, please, John?
Loka Dhamma. The Dhamma in this context is referring to a concept.
Oh, Lokiya Dhamma. Yeah, Lokiya is world, isn't it? Yeah.
Because I just asked Hung, in the eighth, only threes are realities, like the sadness and vui, joy, right? Listen. So it all the concept, not the realities, like the sadness here. They have the sadness here, right? Actually, I don't know the word, but in I just said in Vietnamese, right. So I'm not sure if this
pleasant. I've got it down as pleasure and pain.
Pleasure and pain, pleasant bodily feeling, unpleasant bodily feeling.
Yeah.
Mental feeling, unpleasant.
Mental also, yeah. Thank you.
And dwelling on it, dwelling on the story about it being so susceptible to whether, like now, whether the one is just right or whether it's a little bit too cold or a little bit too warm, thinking about it again and again, so susceptible to whether that feeling is just right. So there are the realities, but all the ideas and the proliferation is in the thinking about them.
Jonathan, you and Azita were just talking something about praise and blame. You said something about both being concepts. Praise is a concept. I gather blame is too. What exactly did you mean by that, Jonathan?
Well, there's no conditioned reality that is known as praise. No.
Yeah.
So they are concepts. They can take many different forms.
Yes. Still, it's going to go back to, in the case of hearing praise, you know, spoken verbally, it'll go back to sound.
Everything comes back to conditioned realities.
Yes.
In one way or another.
Okay. So this one, because when you're looking at some of the other Lokiya Dhammas, I'm sorry, I'm not remembering the others now, but with the praise and blame, there is no, you're right, the praise is.
Yeah, well, that was what I was just pointing out, that there's also pleasure and pain. Or
yes, okay.
Fame and non-fame, or fame and disrepute.
Right.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And the other one is loss and gain.
Yes. So it's pleasure and pain that are
doing specific, but it's not limited. Yeah. Specific realities.
I'm sorry, Jonathan, what? It's not.
Not limited.
I didn't hear what you said.
I said includes, but it's not limited to specific realities.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, thank you.
With regard to praise and blame, someone may be in the hot seat during the discussion, and some people may take it like it's praise because they are able to discuss the Dharma, and it's like a kind of praise that it's worth discussing and the core topic because they can appreciate it. But someone else may think that it's like blame because they don't know the answers. So it's just in the thinking. Actually, there are just sounds heard, but it's taken by some to be praise and by others to be blame. But just sound.
Or pain. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure and pain, are they concepts?
Sukha and dukkha.
Like now, moments of pleasant feeling when one's happy or when there's a little bit of wise understanding, and moments of unpleasant feeling when one is doubting what has been said or can't follow the terms mentioned or when one's a bit too cold. So different moments of unpleasant feeling even now.
It also means physical pain, doesn't it? Not just sukha dukkha. It's unpleasant bodily feeling and pleasant bodily feeling. Yeah.
Yes, even now. Because when we classify the Vedana as free, there is indifferent feeling, pleasant feeling at sukha, and unpleasant feeling dukkha, and the pleasant feeling includes pleasant bodily feeling and pleasant mental feeling, and dukkha includes unpleasant or painful bodily feeling and unpleasant mental feeling.
Okay, thank you. Sorry to interrupt. Cindy, you go ahead.
So they are conditioned reality.
If they weren't conditioned, if they were in anyone's control, no one would choose to have unpleasant feeling or painful feeling. Everyone would choose to have pleasant feeling all the time, but because they're conditioned and fall away instantly, the pleasant feeling cannot last and is bound to be followed by unpleasant feeling. And this is why in the deepest sense, any feeling, any reality is unsatisfactory because it falls away instantly. And there's clinging and grasping to the pleasant, looking all day for the pleasant feeling through the different sense doors. But actually, the pleasant feeling is just for an instant and then gone. So this is what is meant in when we talk about the worldly conditions, that because of lack of understanding, we're so susceptible to these different kinds of feelings, always craving after the pleasant, always being disturbed by the unpleasant, and thinking about them, dwelling on the story of what is pleasant and thinking about the painful feeling we had yesterday or 10 years ago, but actually each one is gone instantly, not belonging to anyone. So the more understanding, the less and less susceptibility there is to these different worldly conditions, the less thinking and dwelling and craving for the gain, the praise, the fame, the pleasure, and so on. A little more letting go, a little more detachment to whatever is conditioned in life, because whatever it is, pleasant or unpleasant, it's gone instantly and doesn't belong to anyone, not in anyone's control.
A pause, because Ajahn asked the Pali expert here for some comment on kalapa, what it means in the text, and she's gone to discuss with him.
I actually have a word in Thai, which is called metta. I'm not sure specifically spreading metta. In Thai tradition, we mostly think about ourselves giving metta to other people, which is still an I and still people and still a good deed that we're doing. And if we know more about the truth, what is the real meaning of paying metta, spreading metta?
Like you say, so we're talking about having loving kindness, metta to others. And usually there is the idea of I doing the good deed, I giving, I having metta. But what about the clinging to oneself at the time? What about the clinging to I that is doing the good deed, or I who is having metta? Because when there is the thinking of oneself, thinking of I who is doing it, at that moment, there's no consideration of the other and the other's welfare. The quality of metta is the kindness or caring for the other, forgetting about oneself, forgetting about gaining anything for oneself. No thought about how can I have more metta, or I am having more metta, because one would just like to help the other person who has a cough or would like to hear about the Dharma, just thinking of their welfare with kindness. So very different from when there's the thought of, oh, now I'm having metta. How can I spread metta? Actually, metta is the forgetting about oneself, forgetting about one's own needs, the forgetting about one's pleasure or one's gain or one's, what can I get for myself? It's the consideration or concern of the other's needs or what would be helpful for them at this moment.
To me, the idea of paya metta or spreading metta has the idea of doing something deliberately with the idea that, okay, I'm going to have metta, for example. And this, for obvious reasons, is not the same as metta that arises spontaneously and naturally. For example, now there are other people who are the object of your thoughts at this moment. And those thoughts can be with metta or just kusala thoughts without metta, or agusala. Might be attachment, could be aversion. It doesn't really matter. That's normal. But the metta that arises naturally and spontaneously when one decides to give assistance or whatever is polite and courteous to someone, that is true metta. The metta that is done as a ritual, as a form of practice, or because one has the idea of increasing one's accumulation of metta, cannot be the wholesome mental factor, because it's done with an idea that now is the time for metta. And that is not how kusala arises. Kusala cannot arise because we decide to have it. It can only arise by conditions.
An added point to that is that it is virtually exactly the same as the Pali word pirtwa, to spread metta. But I think what has been alluded to also here is that it's going to depend on the understanding. You know, just having the idea of spreading metta, well, anybody can say that, but how much understanding really there is of spreading metta. But that word is virtually the same as the Pali word. And in that context, in the Pali, of course, it will be referring to kusala. So it'll always come back to the understanding with regard to that spreading of metta. And it can be obviously very wrong, or obviously on the other side, quite correct. So it'll always come down to understanding.
And of course, if metta has been developed by natural accumulation and by the appreciation of the value of kusala, and that kind of kusala in particular, if it has been developed to a certain level, then it is possible for metta to be extended in the way that one sometimes reads about. But that is the description of metta that has been developed to an extremely high level already. Is not how we should think about metta for ourselves.
Would you like to have metta, or would you like to spread metta?
I mean, at the moment of not understanding, yes.
So who is that metta for, when one would like to have more metta, or be the person with more metta, or be the person who spreads more metta?
For nobody.
Actually, it's the clinging to oneself, clinging to having more metta, to being the good person, to being the kind person. So at those moments of wishing to have more metta or wishing to spread metta, no metta at those moments, because it's actually the clinging to I being the person spreading metta. And it's the same if one would like to be the person with more understanding or be aware more. This is what conditions wrong practices. This is why people follow metta meditations, wishing to have more metta, trying to have more metta, but no metta to those around.
There is an occasion for metta any time another being is the object of one's consciousness, but that doesn't mean there can be more metta than there is in one's life, because it's limited by the accumulated tendency and other things. But if one appreciates that as kusala and is able to distinguish it from attachment, which is the near enemy and so forth, then there may be conditions for it to be recognized when it arises naturally in daily life. And that is the beginning of its development.
Does metta falls into the category of kusala? Is it the same thing?
It's a kind of kusala, because at that moment of kindness or care for the other's will, no clinging at that moment, no aversion, no being disturbed, no thinking of oneself for those moments. But as soon as it's the thinking of oneself or wishing to be the kind person or wishing for some acknowledgement of one's kindness, then the akusala follows so quickly. But the moments of metta can only arise with the kusala, the wholesome cittas, without attachment, without aversion, without ignorance at those moments, with or without understanding.
And the person who understands about the development of metta realizes that it doesn't mean one has to change one's conduct towards people. It will have its own effect naturally, I suppose, but one can't have more metta by acting in a more friendly way. That is not what is meant by metta.
So perhaps if I understand more, but that's not my accumulation to have metta, even though I understood more of the Dhamma, I might not show a sign of being a nice person or.
Yeah, one can refrain from saying some unkind words, harsh words out of consideration for the other person. So it doesn't manifest in any way that's apparent to the rest of the world. That doesn't matter. It's a question of the mental state only, not the bodily act.
Can you tell now, looking around the room, who has metta now? Impossible, actually, even to understand for oneself now when there is metta and when there is attachment, which may be very subtle attachment, is not known. So we cannot tell by the outer appearance.
On this topic, Sarah, one time you shared what the Buddha told, what's the name, about the metta taking for oneself is not as precious as one moment of taking dosa, not oneself. Could you share that?
About how one could do so much generosity and kindness, but a moment of metta is more precious, but however much loving kindness, however much care for others, however much goodness, not as precious as one moment of insight, which we were talking about, direct understanding into the impermanence of reality now. Is this what you were mentioning?
That's the Buddha talked to
Anatta Pindaka. A finger snap of understanding is more precious than all the kindness, all the generosity, because Anatta Pindaka used to do so much goodness, supporting all the bhikkhus, making the monasteries available and so on. But the Buddha taught that a finger snap, just a moment of right understanding of reality now, is more precious than all the goodness and all the kindness.
Can one make that to oneself?
I'm not sure there was something that you mentioned in the question that maybe it just sounded like that.
Because when you were sharing that sutta, I was very impressed because I think you were saying even a moment of knowing dosa is not mine. That is much, much more precious than all the metta taken up for my any.
If there's so much metta, but it's all taken for my metta and my goodness, then okay, there is some metta there, but the moments of understanding that it's not my metta, it doesn't belong to anyone, whatever reality arises now, is not self, is even dosa. Even when dosa arises, understanding dosa as just a dhamma, just a conditioned reality that falls away, is more precious than all the goodness, if there is the clinging to it all as my goodness.
Sorry, can I have the clear definition of metta? Because in Thai, it's mean giving something up, no, kind of knowing that there's no you, so you give something up for someone. But is that the correct understanding of the right word?
I believe it means wishing well for the other person. That simply that. So the opposite of thinking of the other person as an enemy, thinking of them as a friend in that sense. It doesn't mean being friendly in the conventional sense, but it's the mental state of wishing well for the other person that is the object of one's consciousness at that time. That's all.
The moment of wishing the other well, the moment of kindness and thinking of their needs rather than one's own needs. Is there a little giving up of selfishness at those moments? So instead of thinking of one's own comfort, one's thinking of the other's comfort, instead of thinking about one's own pleasure and worldly conditions and one's considering the others. So it is a little giving up of selfishness and self for those moments of sharing or giving.
We have metta for all of us now. In order to understand metta, see, it's a reality. It's conditioned to arise. So now, many people, we have metta for all of us. this person, that person, you know, and considering and considering.
Is it up to my accumulation?
No, I mean now.
Now I'm just...
understand metta, whether it's metta or not, or whether there's metta or not. It has to be this moment with many people around. We have metta for all.
I'm just hungry right now. So.
See, that's why we have to understand each moment as it is. And in the absolute sense, no one at all. When we understand metta as just a reality, it doesn't belong to anyone at all. It's conditioned right then to be metta. So if you would like to know whether that person has metta or not, you cannot know at all. Only at the moment when it's there, when it's your own. So now if there's no metta arising, you cannot tell. Or to whom, one by one.
When there's thinking about one's hunger, is there metta at those moments? That's the worldly conditions being preoccupied with one's pleasant or painful feelings and thinking, dwelling on the painful feeling, wishing for some pleasant feeling. So when one is bound by the worldly conditions at those moments, no metta, no kusala, but that's daily life. Most of the time it's like that. So
there be metta right now.
If it's for
me, I'm not your friend.
Can we consider about metta and then metta can arise?
If you don't know the correct basic of metta, you cannot tell at all. But when such feeling or moment is there as metta, it's different from other moments. But we can change the word. Do you like convention? Like metta or attachment?
Maybe attachment?
That's why to be truthful to the truth. It cannot be told because it's gone away instantly as soon as it has arisen.
Is there friendliness to those on the screen at home or other people, or just to particular people like your father or your brother, just wishing to help them? Then it's not metta, because if it's metta, anyone that one can share with or show kindness to. So if it's just this person but not that one, then it is attachment for sure.
To her, see. She might be thirsty.
Yes, Ajahn, the metta is no selection.
But that definition, it's a...
No matter, I sit here or there.
Right.
I couldn't exactly, it's there, different right. Direction.
Yes. In the perfection leading to enlightenment, they're talking about a definition which Dream was asking about the definition of metta. And in the approximate cause, we talk about a characteristic is promoting the welfare. Its function is to provide for the welfare, or its function is to remove resentment. Its manifestation is kindness. Seeing the agreeable side of beings is its approximate cause. Even though it has no selection, but the approximate cause mentioned about seeing the agreeable side. Could you explain about?
Oh, that can there be metta?
But the metta has no selection, right?
No. Otherwise, is it pure metta or you have attachment, some level of that person that you know? What about to stranger?
Right.
And the one as your friend?
Usually there's attachment, yeah.
That's why when one has developed understanding, it conditions metta.
Right.
Dhamma is Dhamma for all.
Right.
Not my kusala. Mm-hmm. It's not as dangerous as his kusala or hers kusala.
Right.
Or a kusala.
That's paramis.
I think it just means the same as thinking of the other person as a friend rather than an enemy. There's no thought of animosity or whatever, just like a brother, or treating other people like a brother or sister or a fellow human being, some general thing like that. I don't think it means having to find a specific point of agreeableness.
No.
But if it happened to see the disagreeable side, then there's no proximate cause for metta, right?
And if one sees the agreeable side, oh, this friend is so kind and so good. What about the attachment? So the attachment is a near enemy. It can be the proximate condition for attachment too.
Yes.
Thinking of the agreeable person, and it depends on the understanding right now when it's there.
That's the definition you are looking for. You were asking for the definition of metta. That's the initial one, right?
I just remind that originally she mentioned about spreading the metta for everyone.
Can you spread the metta?
No. For the point she mentioned, I think metta is some kind of kusala. Then the value is about whether we understand the moment of the metta or not, not about having much more metta or kusala citta. I think that's it, more valuable. Even trying to have the metta, we cannot get the metta. And can metta and karuna arise together?
What is karuna?
Just asking Hang, that is about a care of the others in the difficulties.
Right.
Something like.
So when one's friend is sick or doesn't understand anything about the Dharma and one would like to help or tries to help, karuna, the sympathy is there. And at that moment of sympathy, is there kindness when one has sympathy?
I think so.
Yes.
Okay.
So there is aloba there. There is adosa there. So metta is adosa when the object is other beings that one is, there is friendliness to. So this is why metta is, there is an opportunity anytime in the day, whenever one's with other friends, whether they're happy or sad, having good fortune or misfortune. Whereas karuna is when there is some difficulty or some lack. But for metta, it can be any time at all.
There are both.
As soon as one is out in the street looking at the babies or the other people, when one isn't thinking about one's hunger.
They are both adosha. They are both adosha. I mean the metta, it's adosha, right? It is karuna also the adosha? I mean the citta-sika, adosha.
Metta is adosa cetasika. Karuna is its own cetasika. Oh. There is a cetasika, a karuna. So different quality, different characteristic. But metta is adosa cetasika when the object is other beings. And the joy in others' good fortune is also a cetasika. But upekkha, the equanimity to other beings, is tatramajatata cetasika, upekkha cetasika.
You can say that when karuna arises, there will be there the adosa cetasika though. It has to be there.
Even though karuna is seeing the difficulty of the others, but for the highest level, we imagine the Buddha's karuna. We, even someone happy has a conventional success, in ignorance, he still has the karuna. To the difficulty, deepest sense
any,
is ignorance.
For any being right. At all, right? Right? Like even now when we're happily discussing Dharma together, but so little understanding, so much ignorance. So it can be the thinking with karuna about the misfortune that there's so much ignorance even now.
Or in the Buddha's case, because he sees the unsatisfactoriness of every conditioned reality. So for every being in samsara, there is compassion.
Can one have karuna or metta without a true understanding of each moment, but keep on having those and live a good life?
Do you have some friends or relatives who are very kind, always like to help other people, always go out of their way to take care of others' needs, even though they have no interest in studying the Dharma at all? So by accumulation, some people are very kind and very helpful just by their accumulation. But if there is no understanding developed, then it's not developed. It's just by habit, by accumulation. So this is why understanding is so precious, because if the characteristic of metta is not understood, and if it's taken for my metta, however great that metta is, it cannot lead to the development of understanding of the truth and the right path, which leads out of samsara and leads to the eradication of defilements, because it's always taken for my metta, my goodness.
Does one's understanding of the true nature of the reality of the present moment depend on one's accumulation of metta? No. So it is a kind of kusala, but it's not the kind of kusala that leads to the development of the path taught by the Buddha in itself. But for the person developing understanding, all kinds of kusala are a support for that understanding.
Can you name some example of a kind of kusala that supported the good understanding, the right understanding?
Just understanding itself is the only kind of kusala. I should qualify that, because there's more than one kind of understanding, but understanding of the true nature of present moment reality accumulates. It also leads to the goal. But the understanding that is associated with understanding about the other kinds of kusala, for example, we've been discussing what metta is and how it's beneficial to oneself and others. So there may be some appreciation of its usefulness, but that understanding does not lead to the development of the path either. So the understanding that we call insight or satipatthana is the only kind of kusala that ultimately will lead to the eradication of all akusala.
Ajahn often talks about the development of the paramis, the perfections. Metta is one of these perfections. So if it develops together with the right understanding of realities, it is one of the qualities that supports that development, because there is the letting go of attachment and there is the care for others, and this can condition more understanding if there is the understanding of it as not self. And the same with other paramis like generosity or truthfulness or renunciation of akusala. So just not having strong anger is not a condition for understanding. But if there is the understanding of the anger, if there is the understanding of the harmfulness of anger and development of metta, it supports the understanding, the letting go of all kinds of akusala, with the understanding that it's not my kusala or akusala, not my metta, not my anger.
So someone cries, you have to support right understanding. That is wrong again.
Definitely the wrong path.
Because yes, it's attachment to the understanding.
Whenever there's the idea of having more metta or wishing to have metta or wishing to give to support the path, wishing to be more truthful, wishing to renunciate evil, completely the wrong path, not the development of the perfections that support understanding. So what about if someone likes to sit quietly and contemplate about metta or recite about metta to have more metta? Can it condition more metta?
No.
because it's all taken for me and my metta, and the clinging to having more metta is there. The opposite of just considering what is helpful for someone else in daily life.
In addition to the point of the support, in reality, I mean, in the way how it works, like a metta can be support for the understanding the realities. It's the way how it's well, right? It's real, not about having metta to understand better, but the metta can support the understood to be developed, right? I mean, in nature.
In what way?
Sarah said it, metta can happen anytime, any condition is by condition, right? We cannot sitting here to think about how to make metta. It arises. But by that way, such metta qualities can support the understand the realities. It's the way how it works, right?
Well, it's not necessary to identify specific occasions that it might be helpful, but an obvious one is this one, because if one is associating with other people, but there's too much aversion towards a particular individual or whatever, then it could be a condition for not being here or not listening to what was being said or something like that. So obviously the person who has metta is welcome to join any discussion, as it were, to be anywhere. And in that sense, one can see it as a support. But we just generally acknowledge that any kind of kusala is a support for the development of understanding. For the one who is developing understanding, obviously life is easier if there's more kusala in life. On the other hand, it should not be thought that a kusala is a hindrance to the development of understanding either, because that is not the situation, because there can be awareness of a kusala just as easily as there can be awareness of kusala. So one should be wary of, as it were, thinking that the more kusala, the more there will be understanding. No. Yeah.
Moments of kusala kind of support right understanding it all.
Can be understood, but it cannot support the right understanding too.
Yes. By way of Pakkathupanishadapaccaya, it needs also right understanding.
I think Jonathan's examples were quite good. If one's preoccupied with one's hunger or has animosity to those around, or is preoccupied with one's physical discomfort or lack of gain or fame, for example, then is there any appreciation of the Dharma at those moments when one's lost in the story about oneself and one's well-being?
So listen carefully, consider it carefully. Otherwise, one will have more akusala moments.
Speaking of hunger, this reminds me of what I read somewhere, what the Buddha told a bhikkhu about, if you can see what I see, you'll give your last breath to someone who need. So that example of understanding can condition the other kusala.
Yes, thinking of the other's needs,
right,
then.
Right. But we cannot see what he sees, no. So.
A question for Cindy. So Cindy, we're talking about different kinds of kusala and akusala, wholesome states and unwholesome states. And sometimes for some friends of ours, when they hear about wholesome and unwholesome states, it can be quite difficult to accept that right now the kindness is wholesome, but the attachment, for example, to one's children is unwholesome. Any questions about wholesome and unwholesome, or kusala and akusala? For example, if we talk about the moment of kindness as kusala, but the moment of clinging as akusala, is that clear why we say?
Yes, yes, it's clear.
Because some friends of ours in Sydney, for example, they it's just a value judgment to say this is kusala and that is akusala. They will question it, whether we can say this. So that's why I think Jan was stressing to understand the quality or the nature of metta. It has to be when it arises now. Otherwise, we just think about the story of when there is metta, like when you're kind to the stranger in the street. But what about at this moment? Metta or clinging? So it depends on understanding to know it, and it doesn't belong to anyone. We think of a kind person or a mean person, but actually it's just a mental state that arises and falls away instantly. Cindy is a close friend of mine from Hong Kong, and I think of Cindy as very kind, very generous friend. She always likes to treat everyone for lunch and this kind of thing. And I think of Cindy's kindness, but actually the kindness doesn't belong to anyone. It's just that reality which arises and falls away, because in truth, no Cindy, no Jan, no anyone, just different dharmas, different realities arising and falling away, nothing lasting at all. So it's the story one has of this person is this kind of person and that is that kind of person, but actually just different realities, no one there at all, but so very deep and subtle.
So if metta does not arise, Cindy cannot be friendly.
It's no metta. That won't be the story of the friendly Cindy or the friendly Ajahn. But even so, a bit like when we were talking about the worldly conditions, it's the thinking about this person or that person, because who can know at this moment whether there is metta or not? It's just a story, an idea about this person or that person.
Can there be metta to a reality? Metta to thinking? That's why only being, living being, is the object of metta.
I mean, not for the trees, because sometimes people very care of this.
Or not to vedana chittasika.
No metta for the flowers or the pots or the plants in the room.
Nanajan just mentioned metta to ourselves. How can it be and how can it happen? And
impossible.
We cannot metta ourselves?
No.
Ourselves is some kind of being. How can we metta ourselves by doing something good to?
But it's not you who is metta to another you there.
The nature of metta and all these qualities we're talking about, the compassion and the sympathetic joy, is to the welfare of others, the kindness to others, to their good fortune, to the insects, to the snakes, to the other beings, wishing them well. When it's wishing I well, the clinging, the attachment is there. Actually, we don't need to hear the Buddha's teachings to find out about the clinging and attachment, because we're all experts in that already from morning to night, thinking about me and my comfort and my clothing and my care and my happy feeling and my gain and so on. This is not metta. This is the clinging, thinking of myself. So metta is always to the well-being of others. That's why there is so much attachment to oneself in a day and so little metta to others. The clinging is so much more precious.
So this is the teaching of metta ourselves. It's one of the popular practice in the Buddhists in Thailand.
Strong understanding, because actually there can be condition for metta to arise when thinking of one's own desire or wish to be happy, not to be dukkha. So the other is just like we or us don't want to have such experience. That's why from understanding the truth, there can be metta to anyone. but not I, because no other I is there to be metta too.
Just as
we don't like to have that painful feeling, the painful bodily feeling, others don't too. So we care or take care of their welfare because we know that for them too, they like to have pleasant feeling also. Or just like we don't wish to be sad, others don't too. So we think of their welfare. So the self is just an example, but the metta, the kindness, is to the well-being of the others. Very common misunderstanding, not just in Thailand, everywhere.
But I think the point is, and what Ajahn has been stressing, there's a qualitative difference between one's thoughts towards another being and one's thoughts towards oneself. Wanting to harm another being and wanting to inflict harm on oneself, they're quite different kinds of agusala. And the same with the wholesome qualities of metta and karuna. The wishing for the welfare of another being is quite different from thinking of oneself in some sort of way like that. The kind of mental thought behind it is different.
You mentioned about understanding whatever arises in our body. Because without understanding our body, we cannot understand the other being, right? The suffering or whatever they need. Then
it doesn't need to be understanding anything, but when just as we don't like to have painful feeling, others don't too. So we show kindness or help when others are in trouble because we know that they don't like to be in trouble just as we don't like to be in trouble. So it's just an example. Or if they are stuck in the traffic, just like we don't like to be stuck in the traffic. So there can be friendly thoughts or kindness to the other drivers because it's the same experiences we have.
Just to add to what I said a minute ago, generosity towards another being is quite a different quality than being generous towards oneself. Not giving anything up for that.
It's a good point. Can there be generosity to oneself, Jagrit?
We can think in that way, but I think we can see that the mental state is quite different in those two cases. Very new agey to think of looking after oneself, be kind to yourself. And in a sense, of course, there may be a tendency to think of oneself in a way that's counterproductive, low self-esteem and so forth. They say one should have positive thoughts to oneself. There's no harm in it. But in terms of the quality of the mental state, it's not anything to do with the kind of thoughts towards another person.
So I'm thinking why metta make very, very much more attachment to like the Buddhism person, like everyone want like attachment to the metta. Everyone want to like to have more metta. Yeah.
Because everyone wants to be the good person, the kind person, the generous person, the understanding person. So the clinging is there. And the more one focuses on oneself and having more metta, the more clinging there is on and on and on.
Wants to be and wants to be seen as being. Mm.